continue with the one meeting as well, with the deputy that we did.
I'm up for adopting the full stops, there's about 3 full stops, that's all. Very great, right there. 4.5 full stops there, 6.3 and 8. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. I think that we should sort it out. Presented by Honorable Makaita. Thank you very much, Honorable Member.
Chair, are we dealing with matters arising from them? So I agree that the minutes are of the list. There's just one issue that arises. Can I address that?
Yes,
Chair, that one of the resolutions of the committee was that the list of all stakeholders that were invited to make submissions on the amendment that should be provided by the committee now. I'm very appreciative of the information that's already very useful. However, it refers to stakeholders that appeared before the committee, stakeholders that sent written submissions, and stakeholders presented in the provincial hearing. It's not necessarily the all the people that were invited. So there might have been people that were invited that didn't see any of these three submissions there. So I just want to get clarity on that. If there's any further information that can be sent to us, I would appreciate that. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We issued invites through the media alerts and through newspapers because we would like to individually when you omit one of the information of this crisis. Therefore, we opted for inviting. We did the advert to two national newspapers, and we did the radio address, and we did the.
I can't remember, but we wrote to the PDO officers as well. Thank you. I can't wait. Another one,
sent us an email also, in the list of people that have been supported on that. We also include some.
In your chapter, you put further in the presentation, that it was an omission.
Please, another member, can you proceed with the agenda? The previous meeting, we have not aware that we remove the road, but we will say that the tension of security of Kenya amendment bill, we ended up with those. We have to start with those four. The last member who was left was Honorable Matthew, if I'm not mistaken, and Honorable Mother and
Chairperson, I don't have a difficulty with the thrust and the idea of ensuring legal representation. What I'm concerned about is that the underlying assumption is that the property owner is the person that can afford legal representation itself. It's not necessarily the case. It could also be a fairly small property, it could be a property owner that has not necessarily a block themselves. So something I would like to flag is, should this not apply to any party in such a dispute like that to arise? So it's not only the occupier, I would say it's the occupier or any of the parties involved in the eviction that this court should be satisfied that legal representation was in fact in the interest of justice. I think that's the thrust of the rule.
Thank you, sir. Morning, I'm looking at chapter 4, clause 8 of the older Act. Now, based on comparing the two, one would like to know why all of those conditions are now being substituted with what we see in this clause 4. I would like to know the motivation for that. know the motivation for changing it altogether, just taking it straight to a court order. Whereas in the old Act, termination of right of residence and eviction, there was a whole long list of reasons why one would be evicted. Now we're just simplifying it, if you like, and saying that, you know, the whole process becomes legal. And we don't know now what argument would be adduced in court to justify the eviction. And so the whole eviction now depends on the judicial officer who would be hearing the case. Whereas here, in the old Act, there were reasons that were stipulated under which, you know, an eviction, you know, would be motivated for. So my point, I'm not disputing, it's not to say on a disagreement. I would like to know the reason behind changing it altogether. Because the legal process, we know that it's not everybody who has got, you know, access, especially given the loophole in 4B2. The court determined that the interest of justice would not be harmed by the lack of legal representation. That one makes mistakes, I must say. How can a court in my absence decide that, you know, it's a non-factor? You know, my rights as an occupier were not necessarily disadvantaged when I have no legal representation. I think we're giving too much scope for courts to do as they please. We know in South Africa what has happened before with the judicial officers. They are human beings, they can have their own attitude. We had during the public hearings of difficulties for the occupiers to even access, you know, legal representation. And I would just wonder it like that and say judicial officers decide if the occupier's rights are not necessarily, you know, undermined by lack of representation, legal representation. And I think it becomes too burdensome on that. It opens a big hole. That's why I would like to know the reasons why we're opting for this vote. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and honourable members and colleagues. I will give you the first question, for example, because the second one is to the substance of the court, which is from the committee in the program. Perhaps the first one. The cross-court does not replace the entire Section 9. What it does is only replace subsection 1 of Section 9. So if you look at the Principal Act, subsection 2 and 3 are not temporary, they remain as they are. So what we have is an addition rather than a replacement of only subsection 1.
Regarding the content of the clause, the clause simply says that a court order may not be issued for the eviction of a person who is occupying the act if that person does not have the representation. In effect, the act makes a compulsion for the person to be represented during proceedings for eviction. Unless, in the view of the court, there will be no prejudice in that person.
Thanks for that correction. I missed the point there. This is why I had suggested last time that we should have the amended clauses, you know, reflected. Because I'm doing cross referencing here, and I'm looking at the wrong clause. Maybe now people begin to understand why I made that motivation. You know, it's to facilitate cross referencing. I admit that I looked at the wrong clause. Let me start there. But still, I'm not happy about this this condition that, you know, where this loophole that the judicial officer will say, I feel that the rights of the occupier are not literally undermined or disadvantaged by lack of legal representation. Considering how difficult it is, and they told us this in just about every year, how difficult it is for them to access legal assistance. Remember the story we had when we were in the Fort Elizabeth, I can't remember that small town, I think it was. when one guy had to walk throughout the night just to go to a hearing in Grand South. And we all had so many similar stories. So I wouldn't be comfortable to pass that clause, that particular act, which says the court determines that the interest of justice will not be harmed by the lack of good reason. This would be an opinionated decision to come to. I feel as you said also that I'm not necessary. And it borders on being unconstitutional in a sense. It's too heavily staked against the occupier who already disadvantaged. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I support the principle behind this legal representation. The Chair will recall that the approach that we are certainly taking is that we want to create an environment where constitutional rights of all people and access to the law is at the bottom. I think that's we can disagree on other things, but I think that's a principle we as a committee accept. I haven't received an answer on the concern that I've raised. I think the image that we seem to be working with, as a kind of a default thinking is we're dealing with wealthy commercial farmers and people getting evicted. What happens in the instance of it if it's a smallholder in a very rural setting that where there's a dispute between an occupier and a landowner, and both the people are in effect quite poor without access to the law? And it's in that eventuality where I would like to suggest that if all parties were legally represented at the proceedings that we refer to all parties, that the same principle applies to all parties in this. So I'm just trying to get my wording right. So under B, for example, if somebody can come up with better wording, people agree to the principle and come up with better wording, I'm quite happy. But if all parties were legally represented at the proceedings in terms of which such a court order was issued, unless any party expressed his or her right to obtain state funded legal representation, and although I think it is implicit in point number two, under B, I think one can also add in the words by any party involved. So I think that eventuality we need to cover as well, and I think it doesn't dilute the principle behind this particular section. And then also in regards to the comments of Honourable Fultani, I think one must be careful in legislation to try to accommodate every single eventuality. I think the whole point between a court of law system is that it's not an arbitrary exercise. A court of law that is functioning properly should be considering and weighing all factors. So the kind of comments that we receive in public participation, it's not the kind of thing that you can sort out in legislation. Yeah, that should be sorted out in that particular court of law. The necessary steps need to be taken within the Department of Justice if there's court officials not performing or not doing their duty as they're supposed to be. So I think we must be very careful to try to fix a problem that needs to be fixed elsewhere in legislation like this. I understand the sentiment, but I think we might be complicating, actually creating another complication rather than solving the problem. I think a court official that's not doing its job, that's not acting with the necessary independence and due application to a matter like that, that court official should be removed. The action should be taken against that person. It's not in this legislation where we can predetermine what the court should be saying. I think we should be very careful in that regard. So, Chair, I've made a proposal in terms of wording. I would like to hear whether there's agreement.
Honourable Matela.
Provision of this amendment will mandate provision
he started in the security of Kenya, upon prayers, divine is Christ, change, nothing else. You know the land owners, you know the farmers. So when we get involved, those kind of remedies can be so I'm saying that if such a remedy is needed, it must find expression in some other form of legislation. And in my understanding, it is already a legislation that exists in the country. I also want to indicate in terms of what Noble Bhutan is saying, I understand his point that our experience indeed in the public hearings has been that there is some allegation of collusion between lawyers representing the farmers as well as court officials. All these things have been said. But in reading this amendment, I think Roman figure 2 balance out Roman figure 1. In my reading, it's in actual fact saying that if the occupier for some reason waived his or her rights for legal representation, you know, and that waiving might be because of the influence, the expressed influence of the farmer one that occupied all this or land. Now, this is to say that the court, notwithstanding, that's my reading, of the right that has been waived for legal representation, the court have to apply its mind to see whether the exercising of that right is indeed not undermining the justice process, you see. So that is a balance of women. I think it's important that it must be mended. Honorable Fultani, it cannot be taken out, not at all, because we need that kind of checks and balances. Thank you very much.
If you read newspapers about cases of the Supreme Court, a general criminal process, somebody is given a paper and they say, well, I don't want this one, I'll defend myself in court. So you cannot force that person or delay administration of justice because somebody says, I don't like the lawyer that is giving to me. There are instances where people say, I'll defend myself in court. I think Mandela is one of them. If I'm not making a mistake, I think there is one of the leaders. When you court said, no, I'm a lawyer, I'll defend myself, he never lawyer. So you cannot spoil the case because you want him to be defended by a lawyer. If the right of the accused to legal representation, but at the same time the accused has the right to say, I don't want this. I think this is in order.
Thank you, Sir Hudson, for having me over. First, I'm on the Roman Air. I think I'm largely covered. I was very reluctant to comment, not being a legal food, but listening to others who are not legal food and comment. And my understanding was really in line with this law. So exactly the argument for all the future that has been made from all of the voters of the world of China. In fact, the case in point, I think, close to a month ago, there was a similar case of a gentleman in Paris who actually told the court that I want the court to proceed the settlement myself. And the magistrate asked him repeatedly, are you sure? He said, yes, I am sure. So what you do in such a case, you can't stall the process. You know? So I think that especially what the Honourable Martino said, because Roman figure 1, 2 is covered from 1, you know. the other little one also that I come on to that I would imagine we're not blushing embarrassed about our bias towards farm workers and environment is also about and their protection. Hence I also think that it should remain the occupier.
Chair, I think I'm looking at this legislation from the point of view of this being good legislation that 20 years from now is going to apply. So I think one must be very careful to arrive at view that no legislation, while it certainly has an intended outcome that contains bias towards the vulnerable, that I can accept, one must be avoid bias in the legislation itself. Now one must be very careful, we must also have legislation in place that suits the requirements of the future. So I do not believe it takes away from the need for legal representation and strengthening the role of the vulnerable. If you also look at parties, other parties in that's relevant in this legislation as well, and would it be just to tenureize the tenure rights of also a new property owner? And I'm not talking about people that can afford their own legal representation. What I'm saying is, especially if land reform is successful going forward, you will most certainly have people that who are landowners who cannot afford legal representation. And I'm talking about small farmers, I'm talking about, I can see an eventuality like that taking place with community property associations. I do believe there's a gap there. I don't believe that this dilutes the strengthening of the tenure rights of occupiers and farm dwellers is what I'm suggesting. Chair, and I say this with the greatest of respect, I think we must not be short-sighted here. We must make legislation for the future, not just for the now.
Section 9, the heading is limitation of eviction. This is the content of the property section. It's about eviction, limitation of eviction. So it brings down the exception, what must be considered before the occupier may be evicted. The occupier is not the landowner. Hence, the amendment is saying an occupier may only be evicted subject to the following conditions. But I'm trying to clarify that aspect. It must not be confused. The focus of this question is on the occupier. What must happen when the occupier is eventually evicted from the land that is available? That was what I wanted to clarify that. And on the other hand, the fact that the landowner is not catered for. The landowner is the person who, in the first instance, who initiated the eviction proceedings. And there is the Illegal Aid Act that provides for the right to legal representation. It is always open to anyone, including the landowner, to seek illegal representation. So I'm saying the focus of this session is about the occupied eviction. What has happened before the occupied eviction? And the landowner is the part who has already initiated the proceedings. We don't know what happened. It's possible that we promoted the legal representation already through the legal aid. That's the first part. The second instance I want to clarify is the other issue that was raised, I think, by Honorable Sultan. The understanding must also be on, I'm just going to clarify again the section. The section that the amendment states that the occupier may only be evicted in terms of A and B. Before you evict the occupier in terms of the amendment, there must be a court order issued to that effect. And the occupier must have been legally represented. If there was no legal representation, an occupier may not be evicted in terms of the amendment. Those are the two instances. The exception to that is where the occupier is waived with the right to maybe he or she can afford legal representation for whatever reason. So that is an exception to that one. And the second one is the court must determine. Remember the interest of the vulnerable is always the court always taking into account. So hence this promotion says the court must determine whether the right won't be prejudiced, the occupier won't be prejudiced, or the interest of justice won't be prejudiced. And they say that the occupier is not legal representation. But it must be clear that legal representation is provided for in this, and it's one of the conditions that the court must consider before the court can grant an eviction order. The court must be clear that legal representation, the occupier is legal represented. What are the qualifiers of the provision? The amendment now exists.
Are there any other additions on the discussion? Another member, I think there are two issues that the members have been clarified. Okay. Another member.
Thanks very much for the last input. Still on that B2. What happens if the court feels that where there is no legal representation, the occupier is going to be disadvantaged? Do they force the fact that, do they enforce legal representation? They say the occupier out of ignorance says, no, I'm not interested in legal representation. And then during the proceedings, the judicial officer feels that this case could be better handled if there was legal representation. What do we expect the court to do in that instance? That's
but it says here, Chairperson, that the court determined that the interest of justice won't be harmed. The thing is that you cannot for the person to take legal representation when they feel that they don't need it and they can defend themselves. That's why the court will always emphasize to the accused or to the person who's accused that show them the importance of legal representation and that. But if you take this decision, will be forced to continue without legal representation. I think we're truly repeating ourselves here.
I really keep quiet because I'm neutral on this one. In 1998, I appeared in the Magistrate Court. I was chief executive of the municipality. So there was these two mischievous female employees who were wrecking havoc, like some of you see wrecking havoc in the house, but in a municipality now, employees. So they go to court to say, I am an assistant associate. I was so sure of clearly nothing special. This was the first 3,000 rand, there was the watch of 7,000 or older. So the judicial officer insisted that myself and my colleague get a legal recommendation. We were so sure of that we never assaulted, we didn't go to a set of physical assaulting female recruitment at that. So judicial officer insisted. So I did get that chair. So as colleagues that are crafting, I'm having that picture in mind. I remember judicial officer knowing that this gentleman at least is paralegal in the sense you can't be CEO of a municipality, then to account and still really not even have an idea. Now, Chair, I translate this and take it to the farm environment with two things. Excuse my understanding of South African history that says the judicial officer sitting in a farm environment might be very much conservative in terms of the South African history, one. Two, the person being evicted may not even be as literate as, not in a negative manner, as Nguni was being a CEO of the municipality in 1998. So, then the judicial officer may just say to this person, no, you want to represent yourself, you sure? The person says yes, and then it's guillotined. But having said those points, I'm just saying I'm neutral in the discussion. I saw them, I listened to the undertaking that the principle of representation is actually covered. But I'm just seeing the situation where the judicial officer himself or herself is really a conservative person. Pro-evictions put in the South African history context. Pro-evictions person who has been issuing orders. Remember, there have been lots of orders that are unlawful that have been issued before. So back to like last week on the case of the representation, the foster care child being accommodated. But we insisted as a committee that just as a safety valve because of people traveling. So in a certain sense, I'm neutral on this one, but I would have thought it's better to make sure that no one is evicted without a legal representation. Somebody may be so sure, the grave of my grandfather is here, and somebody might be so sure of that, but the legal procedure and technicalities in court is something else. I stood in a court against Chief Nongonyana, so it was a labor court now. And Chief Nongonyana at some stage just applied for section what. And again, I was wondering myself. I was not aware he's applying to dismiss the case because he was so highly technical, you know. I knew my case. I knew that they clearly have got a strong one. I had advice. But when the lawyer sits there and applies for a section what, then you are representing yourself. I am just saying it. The legal guru. It's very bad when our people represent themselves. And they hardly lawyers like Mandela was. They are hardly lawyers. It's very, very, very bad. It would be brutal. It would be a lifetime scar. So I'm just saying, if the legal section chair feels that, no, there are adequate grounds, then I'll be covered. But you don't want one case under our watch to go through. Thank you.
The doctor's name fully explained the concerns that have been clarified. Honourable members, do we agree with the results? Honourable Watcher.
Chair, we'd like to reserve our view on this
Honourable Susan.
Yeah, I am in disagreement with 4B2.
4B2.
Yeah, I'm in disagreement. So that raises all the individual. Court matters can be very, very technical. All that people know when they go in court is that they know their facts. But once it becomes technical, they are thrown out of the equation. And so that reason that I would rather say, you know, people should be legally represented. Thank you.
But I was thinking that in terms of the structures we have, we have the land management this management facility. So obviously when people are evicted, the first point of port of call is with the facility. So obviously from there, that is talk to the point. How do you respond to the charges? And don't be there to give a guide. Then if somebody says, I don't want to be a lawyer because my son is a lawyer or my uncle is a lawyer, you cannot force that person. It's actually infringing on their right to choose as citizens. You know? What has happened for the right for citizens to choose? And those who are choosing will have reasons why they are taking this choice. Let us not undermine the intelligence of people. The law is there to cover them. And if they want to change it at a later stage, I think nothing stops that person to say to the court that, hey, no, I thought this thing was very light. Now I know I need a marriage. But there's nothing that says, when I continue, continue. There's nothing that says, when I continue,
continue.
I'm agreeing, Chairperson, but I just want to say that, you know, these things are not right in isolation. This amendment still talks to the amendment that you just said. Because before you even go to court, it means there's been mediation, arbitration, and all those. So during that process, the person who is accused, or the victim of eviction, we'll have understood the process even before we go to court. Because the court becomes the last step in the resolution of the problems of the family eviction. And that we move on from the premise that this act is meant to correct the wrongs of the past and wrongs of the immediate present. I mean the immediate past. Because you are amending an act that was amended some years ago. So for me, I just hope maybe the other members will see the same thing.
I'm just asking the question from the legal point here. Is the arbitration provided there? So we are in section?
10.
10. Oh, sorry. I'm 11, sorry.
No comment from the judge of honorable members.
Chief, in terms of mediation or arbitration, the one concern that I have is it's something that I picked up in my brief involvement in this preparation process as well, is where does mediation and arbitration start? is you could also have a, you know, there can be an ongoing type of thing that ultimately also doesn't serve the interest of justice. And I know the expropriation bill at time limits was with that. In that regard, I would like to hear a comment on how is mediation envisaged in terms of the legislation? How do you prevent mediation not actually delivering a result? Is there a need for some form of time frame?
Sure, thanks. Yeah, it, my phenomenon, which has involved the Section 10 and 11, and close to Honorable Walter's clarity seeking one. The arbitration, I know arbitration is a different context of labor relations there, but now the arbitration here definitely is a different context. But in the LRA, if you go the arbitration route, you're not going the court route. So when so you say it's not general. There can still be arbitration after arbitration, we'll still find ourselves in a court situation provided here. In other words, the phrase will give the impression that mediation and arbitration will then be preceding the court. Whereas my conception is that arbitration is equivalent to the court. I'm just speaking clarity.
Thanks for the opportunity, Chair. I mean, I don't know what the sense of this addition of E, but I'm a little bit concerned about the preferred verb attempted. It sounds rather ambiguous to me. Does attempted mean that they tried to have a mediation take place, or does it mean that mediation actually took place but was not successful? That's what I mean by saying, to me, it's not very clear to what is meant by attempted. Did they try, or was it not successful? I would rather look for a different version.
When you refer to what Honorable Kukan is referring to in September, don't you get the sense of the party requesting whether it's a general point the mediator as for purposes of mediation? Now, one would assume that the regulations, Honorable Kukan, know that there would be some clear provisions that indicate how and define, but not define, but indicate what's the technical letter written to the Director General, a call made to the Director General, because the Act picks up a request. I would assume such a request would be in writing, a chair. But I just wanted to indicate, Chair, that if one also goes to the principal head, the all are being removed in the first instance and replaced in the second instance is only assisting in ushering in the addition, which is the that's basically all that it does and I think the section 21 and section 22 also does not indicate any length of period in my calculation of that date for a chair. Perhaps if need be the ministry comedian could also make provision or through the regulations in terms of other the CCMA, for example, have very clear procedures that needs to be followed when it comes to mediation, arbitration. And next of all, in most cases, they lump it together. It's called con-arb, and that is to save time. But I understand and I have a concern that there should not be an unnecessary lengthy approach. expert, but it would not be correct for those kinds of medical treatment that you are turning to law. That is what I'm just
Chamber, I think there's a couple of good points on the table here. I think, it's really a question of how do we deal with it. The reason I'm raising it is it was put into the expropriation bill the time period. It was a lengthy debated thing. Now, I'm also in two minds whether it's a good thing to have it in here or not. So that the question that I really have is, What in terms of practice, and I remember Madeira referred to some processes, referred to the SCCM processes we had, reference to Labour Relations Act. It's all practices in the as part of the backdrop to this legislation that one can rely on. But what I really want to know is, if this act passed, what would be understood as mediation? How would it be prevented from unnecessary? From not being unnecessarily lengthy, or for that matter of arbitration, what would be the practice that we can assume would be in the background, that if there's no such practice that we can assume, then we need to maybe put something in there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Member Kutmani. I wanted just to go to the question of the practice. The first thing about what this amendment brings in is bringing in the option, not the option, the requirement that mediation and arbitration are attempted, purely from a cost perspective. Because court proceedings, as we all know, can be very costly. The point about introducing a less attempted mediation, by definition, is not compulsory. It is a voluntary process where parties attempt to resolve their disputes in a manner that's amicable to them. It's usually that when the mediation has been attempted, it's an agreement that will be reached that meets the needs of both parties. Again, this equitable and balanced kind of view that we're trying to introduce. To deal with the issue of mediation can take long. My proposal is that we would want to say, as prescribed, so that you can include in the regulations the time frame by which this mediation must be concluded. And in fact, with the land rights management facility, there is a time frame the lawyers or the mediators, when they are put on term, they are requested to provide an action plan and a time frame is stipulated. So a way of dealing with this so that it doesn't become a perpetual thing, so you can say as prescribed, but it's definitely an attempt at introducing dispute resolution so that people can still find solutions that are amicable or meet the interests of both parties. So I was trying to answer this attempted. Of course, if mediation fails and the parties don't want mediation, they cannot be forced, but they must at least show that they did make an attempt to have the issues mediated. And then I would think that in order to guide the time that it takes, this is on the safe cost-saving factor, in order to guide them, you might want to say, what is a reasonable time, and then put that in the regulation as you have been suggested. Thank you.
Firstly, it is not a subject of this amendment process. And therefore, to go and see 21 and 22, go back to that rule that says we have to go and seek the permission of the House in order to go. However, Chair, it is important as a principle that alternative dispute resolution must be very clear and it must to mitigate potential prejudice on those that engage the process. And as a principle, it is important that you don't run to the court, we must first find other cheaper means and more incentives of solving this thing. So, Chair, the empowering provision for subordinate legislation, for regulation in the Act, as it currently stands, is wide enough for the Commission to resolve that regulations on how to engage the dispute resolution provided for 21 and 22 should be a procedure to outline the process in regulations in order not to cross the provision. However, not in the principle that it needs to be outlined so that those who engage the process know exactly the time frame, the right time to be addressed and so on in the process as well as the regulation. Yeah.
Yes,
the difference between mediation and arbitration is that arbitration is binding, and we are currently we are using both for ESTA and the Labour Tenants Act arbitration rules of the Land Claims Court. So they already are there and prescribed. There is an arbitration panel that was established with the establishment of the Land Claims Court. It is to enable parties where the mediation fails to then go to a binding process. It still would be cheaper than having to go to court and pass the whole thing.
Just to add, Chair, that one who is dissatisfied with the process of arbitration, even though it is binding, still has the recourse of approaching a court to review the decision.
Thank you, Chair. I really can't be specific, but on the issue of the time frame, we mustn't forget who we're trying to protect here. We're trying to protect the occupiers. So in whose interest would it be to actually extend the time of arbitration or mediation? Because there's the occupier who wants to stay, who doesn't want to be evicted, and then there's the owner who actually wants this gentleman out or this family out of the farm. So to me, really, as I said, I don't know about you specifically, but the time frame to me is not really a factor to say the mediation must be within a year or within 3 months or within a month, because the law here is trying to protect the occupier who wants to stay. I don't know if I'm making myself clear. So it's neither here nor there, but it's clearly not a kind of an endowment. Or I can't even have a good shot. You understand what I'm trying to say? So if the law is to protect the occupier, the entire should not be affected.
I think you were just raising the issue on the time frame for mediation.
Yes, yes.
But how long should it take in the way to try to resolve the problem between the two parties? Honourable members, any comments on this session? If the land will be dealt by, you will give the legal advice for the session. Do you agree with this session?
Chair, I've heard the explanation tried to interpret the word attempted. I'm still not comfortable. I don't understand why we shouldn't say where mediation has failed, so that we define the stage that would allow the court to come in. Attempted, as I said, you know, has got the 1 minute. Especially that it's in terms of Section 21, you know, the Director General may request, the party may request the Director General to appoint a person to handle this dispute. So let's rather be specific and say where. You know, mediation has failed. Whether we mean that parties couldn't agree on even having it, or whether we mean that they have the session, mediation session, and they still couldn't agree. Then we know exactly at which stage the court comes in. Thank you.
Section 10 that is being amended here is the one that deals with order for eviction. Section 10 and 10 is leading because paragraph A up to B, which are all the conditions that the court may consider before the eviction is granted, before the order for eviction is granted. These must have been already considered in the court of justice. Now, we add in paragraph E. Paragraph E is one of the conditions. If you read it from the text, an order for eviction from text, from eviction may be granted if, then you go to paragraph E, which is this amendment, if the owner or person in charge of the occupier has attempted mediation to settle the dispute and so on and so on. So what paragraph E is all about is to say that before the court or before the final order for eviction is granted, as one of the conditions, the owner or the person must have tried, they must have already made this condition. So the matter should have been referred for mediation and arbitration. And then the court may grant the order for eviction. And the process for eviction, as Nadia was saying, is dealt with in 21 and in 22, which is another issue. It is another section, the process. Here, paragraph E is not dealing with the process. It shall say, before the court may grant it, you may make an order. You must check whether the owner, whether the parties have referred to the medical arbitration first before it comes to the court for the final court.
English is English. Law is law. Honourable Member Sotelo Sutton.
Thank you, sir. It's unfortunately better for us to express myself the way I'm going to. It does look like we are not the ones who are making the law. Department is. Because for every little suggestion we make, there's an explanation that we're being given as to why there is not even a willingness to attempt to do it the way we want. This has been the case right from the beginning. So I don't know whether we are here engaged in exercising futility or whether we know so little about lawmaking that our opinions are not worth considering. There's such a war of resistance. I'm not happy with this but we can proceed based on the understanding that I was given last week, that this is just a law to take us through a real law that will protect the rights of the occupiers as yet to be conceptualized. So let's go the Israel route, and maybe it's not going to be worth my while to raise any serious issues here. Based on the explanation that I was given last week, I'm operating with a different view to try to protect the people, but the department has already decided that they're going to make it as easy as they possibly can. So we can proceed. But I've registered my concern about the approach that the resistance that we're getting here. Thank you.
Can I just correct you on how it is done? I don't think it's correct that the department wants people in only. But for the legal advice from the department, for the legal unit from the department, is Wongi and Mr. Jekrana, the parliamentary legal advisor, state attorney. So they are here to advise us. We know that you're coming from different fields. We don't have that legal. You need to be advised now and then. So it's not the department. The department legal unit is here. The state law advisors, they are here to assist us. They are not part of the department, to assist us with the committee. This is what is happening in all the committees. We need to be advised so that we take decisions, informed decisions that are in line with other laws and also with the constitution. Honorable Mungo.
Thank you very much for your clarity. I wouldn't throw in oral filter's point wholly out of the I'll still advise legal advisors, all of them, all of you. All you need to do is capture what we want and not what you want. I'm not putting you on the other side. It's just that when colleagues feel like that, perhaps they have not been taking stock at every point you made. Whether we face the article of the legal team, but I would say, Chair, that the legal team. I have one example raised by Honourable Madela on the Foster case, when the legal team was of the view that automatically that person is protected, but we insisted, and my understanding is that it was taken. So I wanted to persuade my colleague Oral Sintani that the legal team just help us with the tools, with clarity, with technicality, but the substance has got to be ours all the time. If not, we then have faith. We no longer public representatives, we just I don't know what. So I would say, Chair, may we proceed, and however the legal team be mindful of this situation. That is expressed, and we can't wish it was not expressed. And perhaps it's good that it is expressed early, so that we take the legal team is mindful. We would seek you to support us, do what we want. It's us who get insulted in those halls. I've never felt so bad, honestly. When we get into a hall full of people, 300, they all tell us you have failed us, you know. So it's not the legal team. You were there. I think that it was some of them. You were there. So we had to defend. So now we get a chance to really be true to those people out there. They're not here in the room. There's no chance they can ever be here that easily. So we are trying to represent their aspirations. Please help us by capturing our spirit. I like, Chair, I repeat, it's my learning point. The example on Foster Care. The legal team felt that covered. But the committee felt, on top of it being covered, please include it. And I think the legal team happily agreed with that. So I'm suggesting, Chair, that perhaps even all of them had a point. The legal team must know that. We call the shot, not for the sake of it, for certain reasons. And then the legal team help us to get it where we want. Thank you, Chair.
But
Honorable
Member, can you also ask, after each and every clause, I give you an opportunity to raise whatever that you want to ask. Then after that, I invite the legal unit that can you please, what you are saying, is it correct or what? So they are advising, they are guiding us. They are not putting us to put what they want, but they are guiding us. So when I give you the opportunity,
whether you agree with the source or you don't agree, you must just indicate, we don't agree, we want this to be like this. That's it. Because they don't force us to do whatever. I give you the opportunity, can you please use that particular opportunity? They're just advising, guiding us. Can you use that opportunity? I plead with you. If we don't need their advice, let's proceed close by close. We must just listen. But they are here to guide us. Let us listen to their guide. They may decide. Because we are lawmakers. It's us who are lawmakers. It's correct.
Another Chairperson, I'm actually concerned that the legal advice we're getting are the misplaced victims of our frustration. And yet, as you said, legal advice is up to us whether we take that advice or not, or whether we want to individually go and seek other legal advice in the process. I don't think they should. The legal advice should be qualified by us either. They get to give us legal advice. We should be confident enough as politicians to say, well, I don't agree with that legal advice, this is what I want, as you indicated. So I would like to support you, Chair, in what you just said, and I think you should also extend protection to the legal advice for the people here. I'm not suggesting they got attacked. I think there's obviously people are passionate about what they are saying, but I do think it's also important that the institution of legal advice that's going to ensure that this process is also done properly, that is protected here as well. I don't think there must in any way, I will certainly have a problem with it if they tell me things that I want to hear. So you have to tell us also things that you don't want to hear.
Point taken, sir. I can see the
camera.
There must be proof that there was an attempt, that we tried to go through mediation and we failed. So therefore, because of that, we are taking these steps going to arbitration. And if, and then later to the court or whatever, I think I agree with it. It makes a lot of sense.
Thank you, sir. For the sake of progress, I will accept the explanation that was given by the department with the legal team from Parliament concurred. Thank you.
Honourable members, do you agree on Section 10? Agree. Then can we proceed to Section 11, Honourable Chairman?
Amendment of Section 11 of Act 62 of 1997 as amended by section 25 of Act 61 of 1998. Section 11 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection. In circumstances other than those contemplated in subsection 1, a court may grant an order for eviction in respect of any person who became an occupier after 4th February 1997 if A. The court is of the opinion that it is just and equitable to do so, and B. The owner or person in charge of the land and the occupier have attempted mediation to settle the dispute in terms of section 21 of or referred the dispute for arbitration in terms of section 22, and the court is satisfied that the circumstances surrounding the order for eviction is of such a nature that it could not be settled by way of mediation or arbitration. I'm not
Thank you for the opportunity to check. Now I'm comfortable with that.
taking the same kind of trust that we have. This can show that the parties have attempted to be a proposal that has been taken to account by the court of the decision.
And others are saying those who occupy the land before and after cover
for the section 11.
Honourable Member, no comment on this.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I hope my colleague, Honorable Nguni, is not going to fight with me when I raise concerns about the word reasonable. If you are a farmer, when the rain comes down, from farming perspective, that weather is reasonable.
Where are you?
Sorry.
Honourable members, do you agree with section 11? Honourable members agree with section 11. Honourable members, we agree that we adopt section 11. Then can we then proceed to section 12, Honourable Mbowe? That is where Honourable Sultan wants us to be.
Please check. Mine is nice, short and sweet, and thank you very much, Chairman. Amendment of Section 12 of Act 62 of 1997, item number clause 7. Section 12 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the deletion in subsection 1 of the word quoted there and at the end of paragraph 8. Addition of that word at the end of paragraph B. And addition of the following paragraph, quoted there, let's see. Determining reasonable where the conditions under which an eviction may or eviction order may be carried out, close quote, it ends there. So, comment, you see.
Any comment?
Honorable members of the section. Thank you, sir. Can I get it from our legal team, services department, what is the understanding of the meaning of the word reasonable in this context? Because when it's extremely hot, that's clearly, would you say that's a reasonable weather? When it's drizzling, would you say it's a reasonable? What is your understanding of reasonable? When I talk about a reasonable man, yeah, when I was good, I talk about a reasonable weather.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we didn't bring our Oxford dictionary. But today, Honorable Sultan is just saying with Wayne, what do you mean by attempted? What do you mean by reasonable?
You don't know
attempted vendor. What? Honorable Walter?
I understand that the term reasonable is a general term used in law. I understand this court is what is presented to ensure that it's under humane circumstances to be consistent with eviction practices and other legislation as well to have this to bring this in. I can't think of another word that should be used there. I think it's the correct word to use, and I think if you really want to. So we don't want to bring in what was the meteorologists and climatologists determine the temperature, the humidity, I really think that is something that's going to depend from area to area. But the underlying principle is it can't be done in such a manner that these people expose. That I think is an application of reason being the correct term that's being used.
But it
has
been clarified by
Honourable Mbowe. No, it's clarified in my view, but that's the standard of reasonable, I would like to stress attention. It's an objective standard in law that is used throughout court decisions. And in this instance, the court that the race was from must determine what is a reasonable weather under which the court of law is to be represented.
Yeah, reasonable for me coming from the court. If I'm evicted when it's 23 degrees outside, it will just stay in the compared to 23 degrees. If I'm in Muslim, I would have average temperature 38, 40, 42, and when it's 23, very hot weather. Very cold.
Honourable members, can you go back to section 12? Do you agree with section 12?
Section 12?
Okay. Still on reasonable.
No, I'm going to pass my judgment. I talk with it.
Okay.
All right, yeah. Now I don't understand that people from Central Africa, when the temperatures are 21, at 23, they will say it's a very bad weather. But we from the southern tip of Africa, we say, oh, this is too hot. And they will say it's a nice warm day. So based on that, then the management from the legal group, you know, I'll go with it ever since. Thank you.
Another member. Then I came in for the session of chapter 4, reading the
extra is that page 6?
Broadly represented by various racial groups and geographic areas
the Republican, both males and females, are represented. Now, I don't have a problem with what it says there, but I also think that the issue should be representative of the communities of interest should also be worked into the nomination committee as an additional requirement to ensure that the functions of the one logically goes into the functions of the other one. So that's the only comment I have on that particular matter. And then if they can just answer the issue of the size of the board, how that will be determined.
Is your with 15B, why have not less than 50% women members? I honestly feel that this is a direct assault on women integrity. If you prescribe that just because they are women, therefore they must constitute 50%, this is a direct and assault on the integrity. There should be other qualifications rather than to say just because there are women you go in there. I am honestly and definitely opposed to this. It should be based on everything else, but not because you're looking at people as, you know, as women. It's just not fair to the South African society. We could find a board that is for 50% women and operating at 25%. They're there just because they're women. I don't quite understand what it all comes from. You can't judge people's intelligence and integrity based on body parts. It's just not human. That's basically what it is. I may sound rude, but that's basically what it is. Thank you.
Again, you must have appropriate qualifications. Even those 50% women must have those qualifications. Not just that they are being treated there as women because they are wearing dresses or skirts or body parts, but they are there due to their qualification, due to their experience, and also because they are fit.
A thorough explanation and graphics of body parts.
Honorable
Oh, my mic is off. I'm sorry. I should have said.
I didn't connect you. Honorable Babamu and Honorable Chavilin.
Chair, I would just like to respond to Honorable Yildan. I'm a woman myself, so I think I'm more qualified to talk about the integrity of women without taking anything away from you. I think this is important, considering our history of women in South Africa being marginalized in the past. I think it will just ensure gender representation. So I think I'm comfortable with this being inserted.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Papama covered me a lot. We are here because we fought for this. But not just about body parts. I would request Honorable Yildan to withdraw that part of the body parts because we are women. Yeah. I feel offended about body parts because everybody has got body parts.
Yeah, the body parts part of the director. I will say, we are living in a patriarchal society. And that if you go to any community and say let us appoint delegates to a show,
even the women in some cases, instead of nominating men, they will nominate, instead of nominating women, they nominate men. It's not because they don't have confidence in themselves, but it's because the way our society is structured, they have been there. But if you look at the, I don't want to go deeper into this because it's a trailer. If you look at the matric results and the number of students in colleges and universities, there are more women in colleges and universities who are performing far better than white children. So the question of it's not only a question of body parts, it's a question of gender. It's gender representation, and it's a way of making our communities to be, to say, this patriarchal nonsense is not going to take us anywhere. We can only drag this country down instead of, and that we need to recognize people according to their abilities and their value that will add in what this board would be doing. It's not a representation of body parts.
I'm not interested in the body parts, Chair. Chair, yesterday in the House, in the debates on that, we took time to discuss gender. In response, some of the, or one party that had moved the motion, suggested that when we're talking gender, we're talking out of scope. This is a typical and a clinical example. Pity that party is not even let here. That shows that in all phases of South African life, gender rears its ugly head. Chauvinism manifests itself and so forth. Now, I'm a science and a history student, Chair, but I wouldn't do badly in history to say, if you investigate or research on history, you'll find imprints of gender or chauvinistic oppression and exploitation. Then, given that, this clause gets to be very emancipatory than oppressive, because this clause seeks to say, we cannot have men sitting out there and evicting women employees and women occupiers on farms. That's the other simple meaning of this clause, that all this was the men's world manifesting itself or oppressing the woman at the end of the day, especially or particularly the African black working woman, you know. So as it stands, it's an affirmation clause. As it stands, it's an affirmation clause. And therefore, it means for the first time in a number of cases, practically beyond this law, you will then have boards with women representation who would look at issues also from a woman's perspective. I've never carried a child on my back with a bucket on my head. I've never. Now, but there would be these women like to carry children on the back, bucket on the head, cook there, and so on. So this clause, Chair, is really, really wonderful. I wish all clauses were to be amended to include this. I would have understood if Honourable Pitano wanted to bargain the percentage. But again, there's very little scope because women constitute more than 50% in our society. But maybe Honourable Pitano could have said, let's start from 30. Then we're still going to convince him to start from 60 and we're going to make it at 50. This is a wonderful, wonderful clause, Chair. I persuade my colleague that, please, Marumo Fast, can we take it as it is? Thank you.
Well, if it is the collective of the House, I am more than comfortable to withdraw it. It was never intended to offend anybody, but it was a technique of bringing a point home. One of the reasons why I am opposed to this 50% representation of women in the board is because, in reality, over 60% of the South African population is made up of the youth. Now, I don't know what we are going to do now when it comes to factoring in the youth, we're going to say it should be young females who should constitute what percentage. We're looking at it from one perspective, gender balance. I don't have a problem with that. You know, but what are we going to do about the youth? They are up and coming and they are putting their hands up and claiming that not much about them without them. How are we going to accommodate that? Or positive, perhaps I should put it positively and suggest that we add a sub-clause here to say youth representation in this board should make up such and such a percentage. But that was silent about the youth. Makes me uneasy. And that is my humble submission. I repeat, I withdraw the statement about body parts. Because if it feels offensive to other people, you know, I have got no other option. But only it was just a way of just emphasizing the subject. Yes.
So I just wanted you to consider that. Actually,
even if it's 100% women, there's nothing odd about it. You know? Thank you, sir.
That is what we're pushing for, that even in Parliament, it should be general representation by all parties.
Yeah.
And we'll be moving from 58 to 64.
Yeah.
Our legal rules, any comment on this? This shall only issue, the issue that has been raised with the consistency, that has been raised by the Honourable Ward. That on the board, there's this representative of communities and interests. But when coming to the nomination committee, just that only representative, that communities and interests are affected in that way.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I will comment on that. I think that the earlier point that was raised about the number of members, my colleagues will talk to the consistency. The way the bill is written, the number is determined by me. So it says much other number of members determined by the bill. So that way, if the committee wants to determine the number, it means maybe generally say not less than 25 or 25. The way they do it, the designation is left.
Yeah. On Podcast 7, the committee was decided to 100% to also add the representation of the students. And it makes sense now because you already the women who are not in the court, because even in the panel, they should be.
Honorable Walter, can you just
comment
on that?
Oh, yeah, but let me be noted. Do we want? Is it not safer to say that it must have, the board must have people with the necessary expertise who have the interest of the community at heart, or do you want it to be so explicit for the water?
Do you have
I just kind of want to go to the chair. I think the representative of the communities, in my mind, that is somebody that has the interests of the community at heart. I agree with the wording. Maybe one should say in the wording, be representative of the communities and interests, maybe something like demonstrably having that, demonstrably having that that art. So I don't have a difficulty with the wording, but maybe the Prime Minister might suggest the wording, but I think it's important to be consistent that it's, in my mind, representative is somebody with the interest of the community at heart. But I think the key thing for me is that we don't, we point the board. It's just as important as the board itself in this type of context. And I'm happy if the words a reasonable number is put in there.
Honorable Walter, you raised the issue of the
Chair, I'm suggesting that if I read line 7 in the way that I'm suggesting it should be amended, in establishing a nomination committee, the minister must ensure that the committee is broadly representative of the various racial groups, comma, communities, comma, interests, and geographic areas of the Republic that both males and females are represented. So just adding those two words to make it consistent. And Chair, then I would suggest just the issue of a number as well, that under point number one, the board consists of a chairperson, deputy chairperson, and any such reasonable number of members determined and appointed by the minister.
That then the that number was already two people named appointed, that is the chairperson and the deputy. So and it talks about geographic spread and all that. As I'm saying, we've got nine problems. So I just I don't know whether we really have to act this thing at this level or just leave it to check what is the minister's determination. And that there are boards, I think, so this is not going to be the only board. This is not the first board in South Africa. And the appointments of boards, there should be something that determines how many people serve in there. So let us not go into regulation. And I'm just that we should leave it as it is.
Honorable members, two proposals. There was the first one from Honorable Watchers that we add the word reasonable number. So the second one that there's no need for us to add the reasonable because it's up to the minister to decide how many members of the board viewing the vastness of South Africa with nine provinces and also the vastness of the farming, you know, communities. We don't know how the minister will appoint that. So now we've got two proposals that we leave the sentence and leave the other one just that we add the word reasonable.
Chair, I think that the issue of reasonable adds in a factor in the thinking of the minister. We're not talking about any current individual let's say 20 years from now, somebody wants to appoint a set of board members, reasonable, the word reasonable means that you have to weigh, you have to apply your mind as to what the intention of this legislation is, what the intention of the composition of this body is, if it's any number, which the current wording suggests, if it can become kind of the municipal theoretically appoint 1,000 people and it can become a big job crash and stuff. So the word reasonable to me, it doesn't change anything, doesn't detract from the intention of the law, but it does add in that element that you have to apply your mind. I don't see what it could only add value. And Chair, I think the question, I think there's no further comment needed on section 7.
If you want to say reasonable, and the minister can establish a committee of 9 people, and 9 may not be a reasonable number to you, it may be reasonable to somebody else. So, let's listen to what the minister says.
No, thanks so much, Chair. I'll get back to your point, parents, it came after you were signing up to the library. Let's just be clear, all of us. States can be abused at all levels, simply finish, including the South African state. So, reasonable as a safety measure can come back 30 years down the line and protect us. So I think that reasonable is reasonable, Chair. And I would persuade my colleague that I was trying to pull tabs by the jacket. And remember, it's really the proposition is quite fair. It is really fair. It is fair. That's why you have Parliament. Otherwise, we're going to have executive only, with respect to GM. We're going to have executive only. But why you have Parliament? To balance, check and balance. So I think it's very, very fair and fundamental. They can be abused. Oral Walters not going to lie to you if I say, including in the Western case, they can be abused of the provincial court. So the reasonable would count in our favor, you know.
Okay,
thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's not like a criminal condition, something that one is taking account of, the number that is different. The way they do this is they are giving the description of the number, if the quality measure to be determined. That's one question. If the committee does not come to give the decision to the minister, then the committee must determine the number. Can say not less than 15, which must determine the number that is being. Because if it's a reasonable, if it's a reasonable number, then you're making that law uncertain in terms of when you read it, people not know what number.
Still will be within discussion, but now the legislation is saying it must not exceed 24.
process to try to gain the balance. One of the political of the consultants in the Arab administration